from the Drown Rat Studios. You're listening to the Justice Speaks Up podcast, coming to you from everywhere and nowhere. Tipping the scales of justice with untold stories of American families. And now, Justice Speaks Up.
Hi, this is Archer Sierra, and you're listening to the Justice Speaks Up podcast. I'm on the phone with Shauna Chauvin out of Mississippi. Hi, Shauna, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Excellent. Well, as always, I'd just like to get right into it. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your story and how your family got on the radar with the Department of Social Services in Mississippi?
Well, I do believe, first of all, I was born into the system in 2006. An old friend of mine had gotten mad, and she had called DHS. It was DHS then. They had come to the residence. You know, everything was messed up because of Katrina. They come to the residence, took the kids. They had already brought one into custody. She was gone staying with a friend. So, of course, we went to court, the shelter hearing, signed into the service agreement, forced to take urinalysis, me and Tommy Alvarado, which is my son's father. So he was in it probably about 8 months. So that put us, like, I think the marker of 2007. 2007, I went, Tommy and I had split up at that point. 9 months prior of, this would be like May, we had split up. I had went to the social worker, and I had asked her if Tommy could have visitations with my son James, or our son, and they said it was at my discretion, case was going to be closed, and, you know, that was up to me, so... On in May, I had let James go stay with his father for the weekend, which would put it like May 19th, May 18th, somewhere around that area. And his father's friend had committed suicide, so he was going to Slidell to get some clothes. On his way back from Slidell, he had got into a horrible accident. He had hit the back of a car trailer that didn't have lights on it, and my son was in critical condition, and Tommy had passed away. 2 days after that, I was at the hospital, of course, the night that it happened, which was on May 20th. By May 21st, DHS had stepped in and told me I had to leave the hospital, that I couldn't be with my son.
Well, now that let's go back a little bit, because what and give a little bit more detail on what happened is that your son was traveling with his father to go get clothes from for the funeral of his friend who had passed away, and there was a flatbed truck driving that had a van on the back of it, and it wasn't strapped down properly, and it didn't have lights on. So he was driving at a normal speed, came up on the vehicle, and hit the back of the truck on the driver's side, because he didn't want, he made every attempt not to have it hit on his son's side. The van tipped off the flatbed truck and crushed what was a small compact car, killing him and severely injuring your son. And of course, you're, you know, 2 hours away, and it was your adopted sister who took and gave you a ride 2 hours away to go see your son in the ICU. And upon realizing that your son's father had passed away in such a tragic manner, and that your son might not make it through the night, you ended up having a severe panic attack and was taken into the ER of the same hospital. And within a few hours after they medicated you and helped you calm down, You returned to the ICU room and were sitting just next to your son. And then why don't you tell us what happened when you had just returned and had only been sitting down a few minutes with your son?
Well, I was kind of like... I was still, I guess, medicated from the medicine they had gave me, so I was kind of ducking out, and a lady had come in. Previous, a lady had come in and gave me a card, like, to eat on, so I was thinking that's who this lady was. And she come in, and she says, I work for social services. And at this time, even though I lived in Mississippi, this was a Louisiana woman, because that's where the hospital was. It was Ochsner. She says, I really hate my job at this time, but can we speak? And I'm like, sure. And so she brought me into the room, like, where you sit and wait on your loved ones when people are sick and they may not make it, like a conference room or whatnot. So I'm sitting. I say, sure, and I go in there with her, and she says, I just want to let you know that I really hate my job at this point. And she says, I'm sorry. And I'm looking at her like, what are you talking about? And she's like, we haven't gotten a letter from DHS in Hancock County, Mississippi. And they said that you have to leave the hospital and can't be with James. And I was like, what? And she said, I'm sorry. And I said, I was really, like, in shock. I couldn't believe this was happening. His father had passed away, and I wanted, to be next to my son. And he was like, I said, can I go in there and give my baby a kiss? And I don't know if I said this before, but he was, well, like you say, he was kind of like in a coma. I guess a sedated one. He had facial fractures, looked like an alien, but that was my baby. His face was completely purple, swollen. His eyes were swollen shut, tubes down his throat, his nose. So I walk in there and I give him a kiss and I tell him I love him. And I walk downstairs and I was like, what in the world? I really could not believe this was happening. So I go downstairs and I call Hancock County and I'm like, what in the world is going on? And she had said, oh, well, I really don't remember who it was. It was a caseworker because they switched so many times. And she was like, well, because James wasn't in your physical care while involved in an accident. And I had said, no, he was with his father. And I said, so you're saying an act of God is it's my fault? And basically, yeah, it's my fault.
See, now that just pisses me off. This whole story, and Shauna, I know today marks the 10-year anniversary of this event, and I just want to thank you again for, we've tried to reschedule your call a couple times, and so I think it's rather courageous that you picked today to finally hop on the call and talk about this. And I know it has to be difficult, but I just want to kind of talk a little bit more about this. This is the kind of insensitive situations that is happening to families that is just pissing me off. I'm just going to say it. The problem with this portion of the story is that the social worker had consented for you to allow your son to go with his father because the service plan was supposed to be expiring in just a few days. So literally by the time the boy would have come back from visiting his father, the service plan would have been completed. She was given, the permission to do this. And then they step in, and this is no grounds to do this. And again, Shauna, thank you for coming forward, because I'm trying to show people with these podcasts and stories like yours that none of us are immune from these people once they find a child, and they seem to be preying on them in the hospital. The hospitals seem to be a red flag for CPS to step in. And I'm not saying that the hospitals are coordinating with these people, but I really think there needs to be a new standard that you can simply just not interfere with family, especially if there's like a situation like this where there's been a death and you don't know if the child's going to live. There needs to be some kind of like human decency here. And this just shows how cold-hearted and calculated and how low this agency will sink to take a child. And so why don't you go ahead and talk about there's some kind of, you know, treacherous play here that is coming on with, like, as your sister, with your adopted sister, because you were adopted and you had an adopted sister, and she was kind of playing antagonist to this story, right? She was trying to basically get your children.
Yes, no, I think that she was always jealous of me, because she was only a girl before I came along, and you know, my mom always said, oh, well, you were chosen, that I was chosen, and I was also the baby. So she always, like, you know, she was jealous of me, she envied me, to the point that I believe that it was more out to get out for blood, basically. And it didn't matter at no cost. It didn't matter. Even on the wreck of taking my kids, because I do believe she's the one who had called them and told them about the wreck.
Yeah, see, but again, this is these damn random calls coming into play again. But again, how in the hell does this agency think they have the right to step in from a car accident? I mean, you've got to be kidding me. I mean, more people die in car accidents every year than in airplane crashes, and yet more people are scared to fly. I mean, so it's just, it's not appropriate. There's no grounds for that. I mean, so you mean to tell me that all the different school bus accidents that have occurred when we put our children on a bus to go to school and the bus driver gets in an accident while out of our care, being transported from point A to point B, that all of those parents should lose custody of their children? I mean, the logic doesn't hold up. It just doesn't hold up at all.
I never understood, because I asked the reason, and that's the reason they gave me. Like I said, my whole thing was an act of God. I feel when someone passes, you know, it's an act of God.
Well, first of all, no, I'm sorry. That was not an act of God. That was an act of stupidity. An individual driving on a road with illegally without lights. That's why we have headlights and brake lights. That's why there's safety checks and you have to have vehicles inspected. And then a second act of stupidity is if you have an 8,000 pound vehicle at an elevated, you know, on a flatbed truck, you strap the damn thing down. I mean, so no, this wasn't an act of God. This was an act of someone's negligence. And quite honestly, was there any, I would think being the vehicles were moving, that would be considered vehicular manslaughter or, you know, something there. What happened with this driver?
Okay, well, I do believe that I could never prove it. He was arrested on the other driver. He was driving a little Silverado. I do believe that he was arrested and later let go. They said that Tommy's alcohol level was high, and I asked him for proof and was unable to get it.
What?
Because the people that he left from the house, Earl and Tanya, they were a friend of ours, had said that he had slept for like 6 hours before he even left. Did not drink before he had left.
Okay, but again, this is the problem with this assholery that's happening with these agencies. Where is the supporting evidence? So is everybody hearing? When you go to remove a child, you need to come with evidence. No more of this hearsay bullshit. You've got to come with hard evidence. This is just insane. But this even gets a little deeper. Like, you, as the mother of his child, there is now a child left fatherless. You should have been given and able to have access to his record showing that whether or not he was under the influence. Because here's the thing. What if you had a life insurance policy? Okay? Now, if you'd have to prove that a life insurance company, you know, if he's killed, okay, take away everything else. If he was killed in that way, that's a bona fide insurance policy claim, okay? But an insurance policy company would want to know whether or not he had any kind of negligence, such as alcohol, that would render that policy inactive. So a lot of this isn't making sense.
The thing is his father did get an accident, some money to an accidental death, due to the motor vehicle accident. He did have an insurance for accidental death on him, and his father did get it. He got the money to bury Tommy.
So, okay, wait a second. So did you go to the, wait a minute, did you go to the insurance company and ask for a copy of that, or ask them if they had requested a toxin test?
I did not, because I did not know at the time on how to proceed, like, you know, with the checking into things. I did not ask that question.
See, I'm not sure that this was dug into deep enough, quite honestly. And, you know, I seriously have an interest in this case, as old as it is. This is like, you know, this is like the baby snatching cold files. That's pretty much how I feel about this whole project. Like, going back and trying to show all the ways that this stuff just went so wrong. And by the way, guys, at the very beginning, there's something you missed here. And this is really going to infuriate people, because we all know how horrible Katrina was, okay? So keep in mind that this 8 months that went by, you know, when she says that her service plan for CPS was getting ready to expire, and the CPS worker allowed, or DHS, I just say social services because it's called something different in every state. I think it's just them constantly changing their names is a PR strategy. So what happened was, the reason the kids were taken and got involved was they took your kids after Hurricane Katrina, didn't they?
Yes, ma'am, because they said the camper wasn't adequate. We didn't live into a FEMA camp at the time. We lived on somebody's property with a camper and a generator. And at nighttime, we would, you know, crank the generator to have air. In the daytime, we opened the doors, and if we needed something, we'd crank it for a minute and kill it so we'd have gas, because it was hard to get gas and everything, that, you know, at that time.
Okay, now think about this, guys. We all remember how horrendous Katrina was. Now, I'm sure 99% of us would all agree the fact that you didn't have to move into a FEMA camp and were blessed enough to have a trailer and a generator and some type of independence where you didn't have to be over there dealing with, you know, the government FEMA, you know. You were lucky, one of the lucky ones. The fact that, you know, you weren't sitting on top of a roof with debris and a river running by you, right? So this just infuriates me. They pretty much came out and said you didn't have running water and...
Right, and that the kids wasn't clean, because my daughter had been playing in the dirt the daytime. You know, she plays, she's a child. And because she was dirty. And she, I mean, she had clothes on, she didn't wear shoes. She did not wear shoes. But, because she was a little dirty on her face.
Do you know how many...
And due to the allegations of drugs.
Do you know how many, like, America's very uptight about this, but there's such a thing called free-range parenting, and I mean, like, there's other countries where they actually have several recesses during the day, and they take the kids out, and the kids learn how to, you know, carve, you know, things out of tree branches, and they purposely get dirty. Do you know how many scientific evidence there is that you should allow your kids to go out and play in that dirt just a little bit? Now, there's a difference between going out and letting them play and letting them wander around like little street urchins, which wasn't the case for you. Again, people, this is after Katrina. Are you freaking kidding me? I mean, we all remember what Katrina was like. The fact that these people were going around after Katrina and trying to target children in such a manner, because I'd be interested if they were stepping into those FEMA camps and having the audacity to target anybody at the FEMA camp. So in other words, anybody that wasn't at the FEMA camp, you know, they just get targeted. Like, this is pretty insane. And then you no sooner have to get your kids back. Dad dies. The little boy almost dies. And what happened after you left the hospital? Let's move on with the story. What happened after? I mean, because clearly you tried to get your boy back. And tell us what happened. You know, you leave the hospital. Tell us what happened.
I helped his Tommy's family prepare for the funeral and arrangements, and went to the funeral. They had scheduled the shelter hearing. I don't even think it was in 24 hours. I think it was like immediately. And I was in Louisiana. I didn't have a ride back at the time. And I couldn't ask them. It was preparing for to bury Tommy. I couldn't do it. And I called them. I said, I can't be there. We're trying to prepare for the wake and the funeral. I went, you got to be in here. And it was just very, very non-supportive. Felt like they didn't even have any emotions towards what had happened. So I tell her that they proceed with the hearing, shelter hearing. So I stay down there, and at this time, I feel like I'm dreaming. I'm like literally in a dream, like a nightmare, and I can't wake up. So we go ahead and proceed with the services. I was trying to get information my son. My two girls were in Louisiana with my brother at the time, and they kept asking me, where was the girls? Well, I was not telling them. And one of these, Celeste was her name, social worker. I remember her. And I said, well, do your job. It's your job. You want to find out where my girls are? Find them. So the day that I came home.
But now, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Why did they want the girls? Because they already had the boy. There was no grounds to even pursue your other two children. But they went pursuing them even out of state while they were with a family member visiting for the summer.
Yes, ma'am. I don't know. I really do not know why they wanted the girls. Because the saying here is, if they take one into custody, they take all of them. If you're charged with one for neglect, you're charged for all of them, or abuse.
So because their little brother and dad got in a car accident, they're supposed to be ripped from their oh my God, this story. I'm sorry, Shauna. You know, it was difficult for me to get this story out too. It just infuriates me. This is one of the stories that really truly infuriates me. So the girls are in Louisiana. What happens? The social services.
The girls are in North Mississippi. Up north, I was in Louisiana with Tommy's family and James. But the girls are up in North Mississippi with my brother. Like you said, they spent the summer with for like 3-4 weeks out of the summer, every summer. I guess my sister had told them where the girls were, because the night that she had brought me to the hospital, I slipped up and told her where the girls were. But the night that she brought me to the hospital, I was unaware that DHS was even involved or anything.
So, just to be clear, this whole time you didn't realize until it was too late that this adopted sister you had that clearly had some kind of, you know, off balance sibling rivalry with you was running interference and undermining the interest of you and your children the whole time.
This has been brought to you by Drown Rat Productions. Remember, we are everywhere and nowhere.
When I get home, I turn on the news. It's the same old stuff.